Welcome to the Inquiry podcast from the BBC World Service. Each week, we bring you four expert witnesses answering one pressing question from the news. A train is hurtling down the track. The brakes have failed. Disaster lies ahead. Five people are tied to the track. If you do nothing, they'll all be killed. But you can flick the points and redirect the train down a side track, so saving the five. The bad news is there's one person on that side track, and the train will kill him. What should you do? It's a classic ethical dilemma in philosophy, but it's now puzzling people working in artificial intelligence. If you struggle to answer the question, how would you want a robot to respond? I'm David Edmonds, and in this inquiry we're asking, can we teach robots ethics?
Part 1. Decisions.
Right now, in my house, I have a writing project going on the third floor where my office is. And in my basement, I have a stained glass window project, and I go back and forth between the two.
On the face of it, they're an unusual mix of interests, building stained glass windows and writing about machine ethics. But maybe not so different.
You come up with a creative idea, you try and figure out how to execute it, and you work through problem after problem to make sure everything fits together.
When not working on stained glass, Wendell Wallach teaches technology and ethics at Yale. That involves reflecting on weird puzzles involving runaway trains like the one I mentioned earlier. Studies show that most people would switch tracks, saving five lives, even though another life would be lost as a result. After all, better five people live than just one. Except another version of the puzzle suggests it's not that simple.
You're on a drawbridge that is over the tracks.
OK, pay close attention now. This time, you're standing on a bridge. The runaway train or trolley is passing below, and it's going to kill five people. But
you could push a person off of the drawbridge onto the track to their certain death. But it would alert the driver of the trolley car to slam on the brakes, and it would save the lives of the individuals further down the track.
So this time, you could save the five lives by pushing someone over the bridge, killing them. Should you do it? Well, in this scenario, most people think taking the one life is wrong. Whether you should push the man off the bridge to save five lives is an ethical problem. Utilitarians believe that you should maximise happiness or well-being. They believe you should push the man. But most people believe that
there are certain values that are more important than the greatest good for the greatest number.
So the first problem in programming ethics into robots is what sort of ethics? Whose values? This is crucial in the world of driverless cars. From Jaguar Land Rover to Ford and Honda to Tesla and Volvo, car manufacturers are racing to bring out the first driverless car. They're expected to be on our streets within a decade. There are very real technical issues to overcome. But the biggest problem of all might not be technical, but moral.
What do you do if it's old people you're going to hit, or if it's children you're going to hit? What if you do if there's three people in your car but four people outside, but one of the people in your car is a child? On and on. There's so many permutations that are very hard to think through. What do you do if the car can calculate that there's a 70% chance that it won't kill, but it will only injure one of the people?
They're all variations of our earlier train dilemma, sometimes called trolley problems. They're highly unlikely to occur, but they could happen. And who gets to choose what decisions the car makes? The government? The manufacturer? The owner? Will it be possible to go into a showroom and request a utilitarian hatchback in red? An MIT website has tracked public responses to trolley dilemmas.
They have over 32 million responses to different trolley car problems. The two broad things they have discovered is, one, people want the utilitarian response, kill the least number of people, but two, a large percentage of people would not buy a car that might elect to kill the people in the car.
Would you buy a car that sacrificed the driver and its passengers?
Yeah, I actually don't know. I don't know whether I would have the right to make that decision for any passengers who would be in my car. I might be willing to buy a car that would sacrifice me, but I'm now making that decision for many other people who may not agree with me in the car.
Let's imagine we agree on the ethics. We agree on the abstract principles which should guide the driverless car. Could we actually program that into machines? Time to meet our second expert witness.
Part 2. Do no harm.
I was fortunate enough to be invited to the first International Symposium on Robot Ethics in San Remo, Italy, where people from Geneva were there talking about the right caliber of bullets to kill people with, which kind of surprised me.
As the conference delegates discussed this, Ron Arkin realized his life had to change direction.
It started to gel in my mind that I had to make a choice as to whether, having been a roboticist for so long and contributing to the education of roboticists, whether or not I should step up and take responsibility for the technology that we're creating, and I could not take that responsibility.
At the Georgia Institute of Technology, he began teaching a course on robot ethics. Many people were, still are, demanding a ban on autonomous weapons.
And if it's a Terminator, I'm there. I'm ready to ban the Terminator. That has no meaningful human control. It is lethal. And who on earth would want to have one of those things in existence to go around destroying whoever it wanted to kill?
But the Terminator aside, Ron Arkin wondered whether autonomous weapons might actually represent ethical progress.
Are there ways that we can find the next generation of precision-guided munitions, if you will, that can better protect non-combatants than indeed even human warfighters are capable of doing in the throes of war?
Autonomous weapons, like driverless cars, are no longer sci-fi. The ethical issues they raise need to be confronted now. Quite what counts as autonomy is contested. But missiles already exist which are programmed to change course to avoid a counter-threat, like an enemy missile. And there are reports that the Russians have developed a machine gun with a camera that, without human control, can select between targets. So can we implant morality into this new generation of weapons?
I believe the answer is yes. We can look at existing moral codes and embed them within robotic systems and have them comply as best as they can with those circumstances.
Ron Arkin's approach is to program robots with the rules respecting human rights as set out in the Geneva Convention.
Just as you don't give a soldier a gun and say, you go figure out what's right and wrong, you tell them what's right and wrong, and you expect them to adhere to those underlying principles that they have been given. We use techniques which say that you cannot engage this type of target or any type of target if these other conditions exist, such as being in a no-kill zone or violating cultural property or a person being wounded or a variety of different aspects.
Again, the technical challenges are huge. How do you teach a robot to distinguish the medic wielding a knife to save an injured soldier from an enemy attacker? But Ron Arkin hopes that not only can robots be taught to be ethical, they will be more ethical than humans.
They will make mistakes, there's no doubt about that, but they are less likely to suffer from the problems that human beings typically suffer from, which is anger, fear, frustration, all the problems that lead for human beings to make these kinds of mistakes.
Lance Corporal Miguel Terrazas, an American Marine, was killed by a roadside bomb on November the 19th, 2005, in the Iraqi city of Haditha. His comrades believed that those responsible for his death were hiding in a nearby building.
They went after the individuals that did it, went into a building, and according to one particular version, they cracked open the doors instead of doing due diligence to find out who was inside, rolled grenades through, and ended up killing significant numbers of women and children. I would contend that you could build systems such as, we'll call them throwbots, which are truly intelligent grenades, which you could throw through the doors, which could observe, and instead of acting with hostility and without even assessing hostile intent, they could wait to engage until they were met with hostility.
Robots don't become tired or thirsty, and they don't become vengeful. Clearly, some emotions, like the urge to retaliate, can distort rational moral judgments. But other emotions seem integral to morality. Compassion, for example, or guilt.
Guilt is useful because it reduces the probability of you doing the same thing again. Quite often before a weapon is released, say from a autonomous drone or something like that, a battle damage assessment is made as to how many civilians might die, how much collateral damage may occur. It is entirely possible that the actual battle damage exceeded the battle damage estimate that occurred previously. So what would occur under those circumstances, the so-called guilt level, or this variable which is acting in a way to reduce the likelihood of reoccurrence, would increase. And it may increase to the point where it will not engage with that particular weapon again.
In democracies, at least, war carries huge political as well as human risk. Do autonomous weapons make war too easy? Ron Arkin believes the opposite.
I don't support war. I don't want war. I would hope systems like this would never, ever have to be used. But if we are foolish enough to continue killing ourselves over God knows what, I believe the innocent in the battle space need to be better protected. That's what I'm acting upon. If there are places where they can save civilian lives, they must be used to do that, in my estimation.
Ron Arkin's tactic to teach robots ethics is sometimes called top-down. His aim is to embed the principles of international humanitarian law into a robotic program. But as we're about to discover, it's not the only approach.
Part 3. Learning to care.
A personal question, delicate question. How old are you both?
Oh, I got to think about that.
Yeah, now I am 72. Now you'll find out that I robbed the cradle a little bit.
I think I may be 65. I don't know. I have to think about it.
You'll find out the relevance of my impertinent question soon. This is an inquiry first. Two experts for the price of one. Susan is a philosopher. Michael, a computer scientist. And, oh, their surname is Anderson and they're married. Robot ethics seemed a natural marriage of their interests. They were fascinated in particular by what's called a carebot.
Hello, my name is Emily. When you talk to me, please say my name first.
The carebot is something that you have in the home. Maybe it's an elderly person and they are doing errands for them, reminding medications, television reminders, bringing them a book, making sure that they have moved, they've eaten, all those kind of things that a human assistant would do with an elder person.
Doris, have you taken your medication this morning?
Emily, yes, I have.
Is the pillbox empty? Please show me the pillbox.
This was a video they stumbled across during their research. It showed a woman being helped by Emily, a carebot, and it terrified them.
For one thing, there was a relative of the woman who was watching the robot and his relative's interaction, and there wasn't any indication that the woman realized that everything she was doing was being watched, and certainly invasion of privacy is of ethical concern. I mean, this was everything that she was doing and experiencing in this living room, he was able to see. And most of us would find this objectionable.
It was a great video to see when you leave the ethics in the hands of the engineers, what happens.
Infringement of privacy was just one of several concerns the Andersons had about early prototype carebots. Like Ron Arkin, they believe moral principles can be programmed into robots. But what's also needed, they argue, is machine learning. The principles might include avoid suffering, promote happiness, And then the computer learns from particular scenarios how to apply these principles to new situations. One scenario they might feed into the robot is what to do when a person refuses their medication. Their autonomy has to be respected, at least for a time. But there comes a point when their life is endangered.
Even seemingly innocuous sorts of actions can be ethically significant. For instance, determining when it should go back to a charging station and charge itself is important because it may have an important duty, obligation that it has to carry out in the near future, such as a last attempt to get a person to take a very important medication.
The Andersons believe that robots should only be fed those principles which command universal consent from experts. But don't ethics evolve? After all, if our robots were programmed with the norms of the 19th century, they might believe slavery was acceptable.
In terms of ethics evolving, certainly you're right there, and we would want to update any robots from here on in.
So that's fascinating. So in 20 years' time, you could offer a new improved care bot.
Absolutely.
New improved not just because it can do more stuff, but also because it's got better ethics.
Right.
That robots may be stronger and more efficient than humans is an idea we've grown accustomed to. But like Ron Arkin, the Andersons believe that robots might also prove to be ethically superior. They could even teach us a thing or two. For example, they might be more morally consistent than us.
I think this could be very important and maybe in enabling us to learn how we ought to behave, avert some of the impending disasters because, after all, it's humans who are wrecking the world and causing all sorts of difficulties, and it's because of their not getting ethics correct.
Having established the Andersons have a combined age of 137, time to put another delicate question.
Are you looking forward to being cared by a carebot?
Please, much rather have a robot than the embarrassment of being changed by a human being.
So, how do you feel, Susan?
How do I feel? Rather than nobody, if I need care, certainly. And I would feel that it would make more ethically correct decisions than a typical human.
You'd trust it more?
I would.
So can we teach robots ethics? We've heard there are ways of doing it, so long as we can agree what the ethics are. But the personal attachment to robots, even if only at an emotional, not an intellectual level, is one of the concerns of our final expert witness.
Part 4. Garbage in, garbage out.
I was at MIT working on a robot that was supposed to be a human baby. And people would just walk up to me and they would say, it would be unethical to unplug that.
Joanna Bryson from the University of Bath finds the anthropomorphizing of robots disturbing. She doesn't even like our question, can we teach robots ethics?
We can program by demonstration, but I don't like to call it teaching because teaching implies that there's some kind of a human relationship.
Robots are not like students. They're just machines that act as they're programmed to act. And sometimes this goes badly wrong. Suppose that we program a robot to use language by mimicking humans, inputting billions of sentences culled from the internet. Well, it turns out that whether or not we're aware of it, male and female names have different associations, and the machine picks up on that.
For example, women are expected to be more domestic. It's easier to pair women's names with things about the house, and it's easier to pair men's names and things about work and careers.
So a female name like Joanna might be more associated more often with kitchen or with iron, and a male name like David might be more often associated with, I don't know, work or sport or strength.
Something like that, exactly. And what's cool about that is actually that tells us something about how do we get to a more fair society. It's actually about our conscious decisions to ignore what we've always seen and say, no, we can do better than that.
So we need to be wary that the machine does not reflect and even exacerbate sex and other biases in society. Garbage in, garbage out. We have to consciously counter unconscious bias. The problem is that with new bottom-up programming techniques in which a robot goes through a sort of learning process, we may not fully understand why it acts in a particular way. It's more and more likely that decisions about who, for example, qualifies for welfare benefits will be subcontracted to robots. We'll want a way of understanding the machine's decisions. We'll need a way to audit the code. And when things do go wrong, says Dr. Bryson, the humans who made the robot need to be held to account, even if they couldn't predict how the robot would behave.
Now, some people are going to argue and try to get out of that responsibility. They'll say like, oh, I put in machine learning, a deep neural network. Nobody knows what all the little weights are. Well, you know, nobody knows what all the little, you know, chemical, you know, where the molecules are in a dog's brain. But you're responsible for your dog, right? If your dog turns out to be a hazard, you're responsible for controlling it.
It's no kind of excuse to say I couldn't predict what my robot was going to do. I couldn't predict how my robot was going to behave.
Absolutely not.
And that may require the government to get involved. Joanna Bryson draws an analogy with the state's regulation of buildings.
Architects have for centuries been subject to regulation because people got tired of having buildings falling on people. So they wanted someone to sue, I guess. But now architects get taught not only about, you know, what are your legal obligations to make sure that go out and certify that your building isn't going to fall on someone, but also, how do you work with policymakers to decide where the building ought to go, you know, and what kind of city do you want?
So can we teach robots ethics? Our expert witnesses say yes, so long as agreement can be reached on what the ethics are. We'd better hope they're right, because, like it or not, more and more decisions that are currently taken by humans are going to be delegated to robots. There are certainly reasons to worry. We may not fully understand why a robot has made a particular decision, and we need to ensure that the robot does not absorb our prejudices. But there's also a potential upside. The robot may turn out to be better at making ethical decisions than we are. It may even make us better people. That's all for this edition of The Inquiry, and from me, David Edmonds. The producer was Simon Mabin. The editor was Emma Rippon, and it was mixed by Rod Farquhar. If you enjoy The Inquiry podcast, do review us online or recommend us to a non-robot friend.